Proceed to the sixth case of the day, Manson versus Northern Indiana Public Service. Mr. Ruff.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. This is an ADA case as well. Williette Mason worked for NIPSCO, and she hurt her right arm and shoulder at NIPSCO. She was on a leave of absence for a time period. She came back on April 10th and was sent, April 10th, 2000, was sent home on that day. The interesting thing, and was off of work for a year thereafter, the interesting thing is at that time there was a job, the accounts receivable clerk's position, which she was entitled to be the first bidder for under the union seniority provisions. And there's no doubt, had she not had any problems, she could have bid it and obtained the job. The question is whether she did not get the job. By the time NIPSCO finished its alleged review that it said it needed to do to determine whether she could do this job, the time period had run out and was given to someone else. The court found that Mason had raised triable issues as to all of the prima facie requirements for an ADA case. And one of those triable issues was whether she could perform the job. And the exact argument between NIPSCO and Mason, which the court found was a triable issue, the jury had to decide, we had raised an issue of material fact, was whether the job required her to do the same repetitive job for an extended period of time, here data entry for 4 hours, and then typing for a period of time, and then writing for a period of time, but blocks, long blocks of time, which she could not do because her doctor had said she cannot do repetitive motions, or whether the job required her to do a little data entry, a telephone call, filing, writing, and then essentially the same tasks total in that period, but not repetitive for any one task. The court found that this was a triable issue, and therefore the issue we had raised prima facie case. But the court then found that NIPSCO had raised a legitimate non-discriminatory reason for not giving her the job, in that they had a right to determine whether she was qualified for the job by going to her doctors and seeing if they would say, yes, she can do this particular job. Our position is that if you accept the court's position in our prima facie case, that the job, there's a tribal issue as to whether the job required blocks of time or going from one job to another.
You know, there's an antecedent issue here. I mentioned Toyota in the last case.
Yes.
But there's an antecedent issue here about whether your client is disabled. This is another repetitive motion limitation.
Yes.
Of the very same sort, it seems, that was involved in Toyota. And Toyota held that as a matter of law, that was not a disability under the ADA. Why is your client in any different position?
So I heard you ask that question in the previous case.
Yeah, but this case is just a replay of Toyota. It's the same injury.
Well, there was evidence. The point is that because that was not an issue that had been briefed by the parties, I had not gone back to look at it and locate it. But there was evidence, and I may not have put it in the appendix. There was evidence. The court found she was disabled, and there was evidence that she had problem doing her daily life activities, dressing herself, washing, cleaning, eating, because of the arm problem. That it wasn't just that she couldn't do repetitive motions. The repetitive motions brought on the pain and the problems with the arm and shoulder, but her daily activities did likewise. I did not point out to those provisions in my brief or in the transcript because it was mm-hmm. the court found for us on that, so I apologize. But there was evidence.
No, but that may be a way to distinguish your case.
There is evidence. There is substantial evidence there, and the court found for us.
Mm-hmm.
So our position is really kind of a twist of the case, the argument that you get always from defendants, that it isn't the accuracy or whether a defendant is right, an employer is right, in whether they put forth a legitimate non-discriminatory reason, but whether it's honestly meant. Because the issue is, at that point, it's not whether they can do the job. That's part of the prima facie case. The issue is whether the employer's intent was discriminatory or not. The reverse here is that if the issue is whether the employer's if the issue is the employer's intent, then if they were looking or claimed they were looking for a doctor's certificates to do a job description which wasn't the job, then that is dishonest, and a jury could find that that was dishonest. And whether or not they had evidence that she could do the job or not, we argue they did. They didn't even have to go to another doctor. They had plenty of evidence even before she came back to work on April 10th.
By the way, did your client ever invoke her workplace remedies? The job that she wanted, the employer apparently has given her plenty of jobs, but the one that she claimed she should have gotten in this litigation was one that, on her view, she was entitled to by her seniority. And one would therefore think that this would be a good charge and perhaps take it to arbitration.
It is on arbitration. There is a pending arbitration.
So
I don't think it's been resolved.
Is pending.
Yeah. I don't think it's ever been. It's been a long time. I don't think anything's happened to it. But counsel and I both discussed it, and we did not see that there had to be a selection of remedy under the union contract, or that by matter of law there's an exclusion that we had to select one that we could do with the ADA and the arbitration. But that hasn't been resolved. So our position is very simple, that the employer had to know its own job description, and that when the court found there was a dispute as to exactly what the job was, and necessarily found that if a jury finds Mason's description is correct, that NIPSCO must not have been telling the truth, because every company knows its own job. In fact, the key witness for NIPSCO on this point was the head of the department. So how can she possibly not know the accuracy of the job? So if the issue then is dishonesty rather than honesty, dishonest whether the opinion, the alleged non-discriminatory reason is honest or dishonest, that's a jury question. And it's embedded in what the court already found as a jury question. So the court's finding really that there was a legitimate non-discriminatory reason is contradictory to its previous finding. So that is really the principal basis on which we believe that the matter should be returned to the court for a jury trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ruff. Ms. Ketchum.
Good morning. The big picture here is that this is a case about pretext. Has the plaintiff...
Do you know why the arbitration hasn't been resolved?
Yes.
Of course, we wouldn't need to be here if an arbitration had been decided in her favor.
The plaintiff has filed 5 grievances, one of which relates to this very issue. The union has yet to demand an arbitration on any of those grievances.
So say it's not in arbitration.
Correct. There are grievances pending.
And yet to demand. Most collective bargaining agreements require a demand to be made pronto.
That hasn't happened here. The union hasn't acted on any of those 5 grievances.
It will never be arbitrated then.
Unclear that it ever will be.
Well, does the collective bargaining agreement give the union 4 years to decide whether to demand arbitration?
I don't know what the time limits are under the applicable collective bargaining agreement.
Most collective bargaining agreements set limits like 30 or 90 days.
That's not the case here. There's certainly, as I understand it, the time limit has not yet run, but the union has taken no action whatsoever on any of the 5 pending grievances.
Thank you.
This case clearly is about pretext. It's about whether there's any evidence that the company lied. As counsel correctly pointed out, NIPSCO has presented a legitimate non-discriminatory reason for not placing plaintiff in the accounts payable position in March of 2000. Let's review what those reasons were. First, when the job initially became available, she was out on a leave of absence with no clear return to work date. Second, when on April 10th, The position was still open. The company received two return to work slips from her then treating physicians. One of those return to work slips said that she could return only to a light duty position, and it said that she was not able to perform a job that required repetitive motions. There's no dispute about that. At the same time, she was still under three previous sets of restrictions from three previous doctors from the previous year for three different conditions, all saying she couldn't perform repetitive motions. The company looked at the job description. It looked at a job description that had been written 2 years before for this very position. It said that the job required 8 hours of continuous reaching with the hands and arms. The company also said to the department manager, let's make sure that that's current. Tell us precisely what she's doing in more concrete terms. So the department manager and another supervisor in the department wrote up a very clear list of what those jobs, what those tasks were. It included 4 hours of steady data entry. The company looked at that, at those two job descriptions, compared them to the job descriptions, compared them to the five different sets of restrictions that the plaintiff had imposed on her at that time, and concluded reasonably that she couldn't perform the essential functions of the job. That's the legitimate non-discriminatory reason that the company has put forth. It's plaintiff's burden to point to evidence of pretext, and that's what she's failed to do. All that her counsel's talked about today is the fact that she disagrees with the job description that the company had. Her mere disagreement isn't enough to suggest that the company's lying. She says that this has to be, that this is a case about honesty, but it's clearly not. The company relied on a job description that was 2 years old at the time. She has the burden to present more than her mere disagreement about the nature of the job, and she hasn't done that. At most, plaintiff could show that the company was wrong, but discrimination cases don't go to juries or courts to determine whether an employer made the right decision or not. It could be that the company was wrong about the nature of the job, but that's not enough to show that it was lying. There's no evidence in the record. Plaintiff has pointed to no evidence whatsoever that anyone at the company was lying. It's that failure that should lead this court to affirm the district court's decision and affirm the granting of summary judgment. Unless the court has questions, I'll rest.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Ketchum. Mr. Ruff?
The court, of course, in finding that there was a legitimate dispute of genuine factual material, genuine question of material fact as to the job description, did not rely on just the unsupported statement of Williet Mason, although she gave testimony that she had had that job 2 years or 3 years before and described it. We also had individuals who were doing the job at that time who testified to it. And we had one of NIPSCO's persons involved in this very process who said that was the job. It was going from one matter to another. So that certainly we raised a genuine issue of material fact based on evidence, and the court was absolutely correct to find that that's a jury has to make the determination. What I'm arguing, is that necessarily implies that a jury could find NIPSCO was lying if they're saying the job was this based on their own head of the job, the person who's running the job, for their own head of their department, based on, and his counsel admits, they went to the people that were right there on the scene. If they're saying the job description is A, and that they're going to find out if she can do A by going to her doctors, but the jury finds the job description was really B, that Mason's witnesses were telling the truth, and it necessarily implies NIPSCO was lying. They had to know what their own job was about, and I think counsel has admitted that they would. Now, if that's the case, then when NIPSCO went out and looked for doctors to see whether she could do this job or not, they were looking for a wrong job, and they necessarily deliberately looking for the wrong job. Now, I'm not saying that that's automatic from the evidence, but there's a genuine issue of material fact on that, and a jury could find that based on the evidence.
Mr. Ruff, and Ms. Mason's evidence as to her assessment of that job would come from, what, former employees? Is that
it came from herself. Because she had done the job 4 years or 3 years, I don't remember before.
Well, that's standard
and,
too, right?
And also, well, that was she had a right, I think, to testify.
Oh no, I'm not a question, but that's she doesn't have a contemporary view of that job. Her testimony is dated.
Her testimony is dated, and that's why we had another.
So who are the others?
Another one was named was Cheryl Ford, who happened to be her union griever at the time, who was doing that very job. And she testified exactly consistent with Mason's interpretation. So this was not speculation. Thank you very much.
All right. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.